good Friday morning to you. It is Friday, February 22nd. This actually is the last Friday in the month of February. 1 week from today, it will be March the 1st. Can you believe that? 16 minutes past the hour. This is Over the Back Fence with Scott Spears and Pastor Steve Whitaker. Pastor, how are you last Friday in February?
You know, I think I'm pretty good. It's going to be warm today, and I didn't have to layer up, and it's, I think they said some rain's coming in tomorrow, but today's supposed to be dry and sunny. Let's get out there and take advantage of it.
Absolutely. Now, at the top of the show here, something I want to do. Now, remember, we always do this at the end, and sometimes we run out of time, but remember, this show does repeat on Sunday mornings from 9, 10 to 10 a.m., and then it repeats right after the pastor's other show on Tuesday from 6:10 to 7 p.m. Now, the Pastor's Spot with Pastor Steve Whitaker repeats a great show you did last week, one of my favorite guests that you've had on. And you want to listen to that again because it's a tremendous story about the power of God and what things can be done. So that show will repeat Sunday morning, 8:10 to 9 a.m. if you did not hear it this past week. And also, the Pastor Show will be live again on Tuesday night from 5:10 to 6 p.m. and then repeat on Wednesday, 3:10 to 4 p.m. Now, here is the deal at the top of the show, and even we'll even do this during the repeat. If we don't get rid of it in this
That's
hour,
not a good way to put that.
That wasn't Yeah, as soon as it came out of my mouth, I thought, you know, I shouldn't have said it that way. But we have a great thing here that the pastor has donated to give away today. Still in the box. It is a study Bible, large print, great Bible here, and we will give this to the first person who calls, who will actually come in, use it, and pick it up. Now, the telephone number is 740-383-9944, and again, if you're hearing this on a Sunday morning or a Tuesday night, the same rules apply. First person to call in who just wants it can have it. Now, in addition to that, because this show is also to inform you of events going on in the community. Tomorrow's the big pancake breakfast, Kiwanis Pancake Breakfast, which goes on every year. And it will be tomorrow morning at Tri Rivers Career Center. And we have some passes to that event, which will be no good after today. So I also have a pair of passes to the Kiwanis Pancake Breakfast. So if you will get the Bible and you will get the tickets to the Kiwanis Pancake Breakfast. Now, you have to pick those up by 3 o'clock today. Not the Bible, but the pancake tickets, because they're only good for tomorrow. So, 740-383-9944. Think about it. Or if there's somebody you know who would want to use this Bible or the pancake tickets, give us a call. 740-383-9944 anytime during the next 45-minute period. Pastor, what's on your mind today?
Well, I'll tell you. A dear friend of mine, Arlene James, posted something that I thought would be a short, good read this morning, and it's going to go back to what I thought maybe we could talk about personal freedoms, things that that should be just okay for everybody, but maybe they're not, and the silliness of all of it. But I wanted to read something a little more serious, but entertaining at the same time, and it was about... Well, I'll begin and let you listen, because everyone will recognize this. I cannot tell you that Hitler took Austria by tanks and guns. It would distort history. If you remember the plot of The Sound of Music, the Von Trapp family escaped over the Alps rather than submit to the Nazis. Kitty wasn't so lucky. Her family chose to stay in her native Austria. She was 10 years old, but bright and aware, and she was watching. We elected him by a landslide, 98% of the vote, she recalls. She wasn't old enough to vote in 1938, approaching her 11th birthday, but she remembers. Everyone thinks that Hitler just rolled in with his tanks and took Austria by force. Not so. Hitler is welcome to Austria. In 1938, Austria was in deep depression. Nearly one-third of our workforce was unemployed, and we had 25% inflation and 25% bank loan interest rates. Farmers and business people were declaring bankruptcy daily. Young people were going from house to house begging for food. Not that they didn't want to work. There simply wasn't any jobs. My mother was a Christian woman and believed in helping people in need. Every day we cooked a big kettle of soup and baked bread and to feed these poor, hungry people, about 30 each day. We looked to our neighbor to the north, Germany, where Hitler had been in power since 1933, she recalls. We had been told that they didn't have any unemployment or crime, and they had a high standard of living. Nothing was ever said about the persecution of any group, Jewish or otherwise. We were led to believe that everyone in Germany was happy. We wanted the same way of life in Austria. We were promised that a vote for Hitler would mean the end of unemployment and help for the family. Hitler also said that businesses would be assisted and farmers would get their farms back. 98% of the population voted to annex Austria to Germany and to have Hitler for our ruler. We were overjoyed, remembers Kitty, and for 3 days we danced in the streets and had candlelight parades. The new government opened up big field kitchens and everyone was fed. After the election, the German officials were appointed, and like a miracle, we suddenly had law and order. 3 or 4 weeks later, everyone was employed. The government made sure that a lot of work was created through the Public Works Service. Hitler decided we should have equal rights for women. Before this, it was a custom that married Austrian women did not work outside the home. An able-bodied husband would be looked down on if he couldn't support his family. Many women in the teaching profession were elated that they could retain the jobs they had previously had been required to give up for marriage. Then we lost religious education for kids. Our education was nationalized. I attended a very good public school. The population was predominantly Catholic, so we had religion in our schools. The day we elected Hitler, March 13, 1938, I walked into my schoolroom to find the crucifix replaced by Hitler's picture hanging next to the Nazi flag. Our teacher was a devout woman, stood up and told the class we wouldn't pray or have religion anymore. Instead, we sang Deutschland, Deutschland, Über alles, and had physical education. Sunday became National Youth Day with compulsory attendance. Parents were not pleased about the sudden change in curriculum. They were told that if they did not send us, they would receive a stiff letter of warning the first time. The second time, they would be fined the equivalent of $300. And the third time, they would be subject to jail. Then things got really different. The first 2 hours consisted of political indoctrination. The rest of the day, we had sports. As time went along, we loved it. Oh, we had so much fun and got our sports equipment free. We could go home and gleefully tell our parents about the wonderful time we had. My mother was very unhappy, remembers Kitty. When the next term started, she took me out of public school and put me in a convent. I told her she couldn't do that. And she told me that someday when I grew up, I would be grateful. There was a very good curriculum, but hardly any fun. No sports and no political indoctrination. I hated it at first, but felt I could tolerate it. Every once in a while on holidays, I went home and would go back to my old friends and ask what was going on and what they were doing. Their loose lifestyle was very alarming to me. They lived without religion. By that time, unwed mothers were glorified for having a baby for Hitler. It seemed strange to me that our society changed so suddenly. As time went along, I realized what a great deed my mother did so that I wasn't exposed to that kind of humanistic philosophy. In 1939, the war started and the food bank was established. All food was rationed and could only be purchased using food stamps. At the time, a full employment law was passed, which meant if you didn't work, you didn't get a ration card. And if you didn't have a card, you starved to death. Women who stayed home to raise their families didn't have any marketable skills and often had to take jobs more suited for men. Soon after this, the draft was implemented. It was compulsory for young people, male and female, to give 1 year to the labor corps, remembers Kitty. During the day, the girls worked on the farms, and at night they returned to their barracks for military training, just like the boys. They were trained to be anti-aircraft gunners and participated in signal corps. After the labor corps, they were not discharged but were used in the front lines. When I go back to Austria to visit my family and friends, most of these women are emotional cripples because they just were not equipped to handle the horrors of combat. 3 months before I turned 18, I was severely injured in an air raid attack. I nearly had a leg amputated, so I was spared having to go to the labor corps and into military service. When the mothers had to go into the workforce, the government immediately established child care centers. You could take care of your children age 4 weeks old to school age and leave them there around the clock 7 days a week under the total care of the government. The state raised a whole generation of children. There were no motherly women to care for the children, just people highly trained in child psychology. By this time, no one talked about the equal rights. We knew we had been had. Before Hitler, we had a very good medical care. Many American doctors trained at the University of Vienna. After Hitler, health was socialized, free for everyone. Doctors were salaried by the government. The problem was, since it was free, the people were going to the doctor for everything. When the good doctor arrived at his office at 8 a.m., 40 people were already waiting, and at the same time, the hospitals were full. If you needed elective surgery, you had to wait a year or two for your turn. There was no money for research as it was poured into socialized medicine. Research at the medical schools literally stopped, so the best doctors left Austria and immigrated to other countries. As for health care, our tax rates went up 80% of our income. Newlyweds immediately received a $1,000 loan from the government to establish a household. We had big programs for families. All daycare and education were free. High schools were taken over by the government, and college tuition was subsidized. Everyone was entitled to free handouts such as food stamps, clothing, and housing. We had another agency designed to monitor business. My brother-in-law owned a restaurant that had square tables. Government officials told him he had to replace them with round tables because people might bump themselves in the corners. And when they said he had to have additional bathroom facilities, it was just a small dairy business with a snack bar. He couldn't meet all the demands. Soon he went out of business. If the government owned the large businesses and not many small ones existed, it could be in control. We had consumer protection, too. We were told how to shop, what to buy. Free enterprise was essentially abolished. We had a planning agency specially designed for farmers. The agents would go to the farms, count the livestock, and then tell the farmers what to produce and how to produce it. In 1944, I was a student teacher in a small village in the Alps. The villages were surrounded by mountain passes, which was in the winter were closed off to snow, causing people to be isolated. So people intermarried and offspring were sometimes mentally deficient. When I arrived, I was told there were 15 mentally deficient adults, but they were all useful and did good manual work. I knew one named Vincent very well. He was a janitor of the school. One day I looked out the window and saw Vincent and others getting into a van. I asked my superior where they were going. She said to an institution where the State Department would help teach them a trade and teach them to write. The families were required to sign papers with a little clause that they would not visit for 6 months. They were told visits would interfere with the program and might cause homesickness. As time passed, letters started to dribble back saying these people died a natural, merciful death. The villagers were not fooled. We suspected what was happening. Those people were left in excellent physical health. All died within 6 months. We called this euthanasia. Next came gun registration. People were getting injured by guns. Hitler said that the real way to catch criminals was by matching serial numbers on guns. Most citizens were law-abiding and dutifully marched in the police station to register their firearms. Not long afterward, the police said that it was best for everyone to turn in their guns. The authorities already knew who had them, so it was futile not to be voluntary. No more freedom of speech. Anyone said something against the government was taken away. We knew too many people were arrested, not only Jews, but also priests and ministers who spoke up. Totalitarianism came quickly. It took 5 years from 1938 to 43 to realize full dictatorship in Austria. This is my eyewitness account. And then it goes on, but I don't want to go any further. But my point is, and what I'm getting at in all this, is that we must be very careful as we things that sound good when we adopt them sometimes can take personal freedom away. I saw a funny one this morning, Scott. I got to tell you this because it was funny. And then I'll talk about a little more serious one. This morning I was watching the news, and they were talking about California. If I had seen this on Facebook, I would have thought it was fake news. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't. It was on the news, the regular. I think she was watching Channel 10, my wife was, this morning. And in California, they are proposing a law to pass that would legalize eating roadkill. Now, that caught my attention, and I quickly turned to the television, and they had someone on there talking about the importance of butcher shops and whatnot, and how meat cutters, and how people should be very careful with roadkill. And then they showed a map of the United States and showed all the states that had laws allowing roadkill. And I immediately told Shirley, I said, those other states, I said, it's not that they have passed laws against it. It's just they think it's so silly they haven't done anything with it, you know. And I thought about that, and I thought, who tells me what I'm allowed to eat and not to eat? Where have we got to in this country that we even allow people to tell us these things? If I hit a deer, And unfortunately for the deer, and unfortunately usually for my car, it's causing a lot of inconvenience. And if I happen to be a person that has the ability to maybe dress that myself or take it in to have it done or something, and I desire to harvest what's left, who's to tell me that I can't do that? Or heaven forbid somebody hit a possum. I have never picked up roadkill, I can tell you that, Scott. Other than one time when I was very young, it was wintertime, and a great big doe ran out in front of my truck. And that time. But never have I... but if somebody wants to, who cares? You know. If I know when I was young, people used to love to eat squirrel. Squirrel was huge. I'm sure there are people that still do. I can remember people stopping to pick up a squirrel that had just been hit to make sure. And if it wasn't too beat up, they'd take it home and they'd clean it. But the silly things that we're passing legislation on, how hilarious. Don't you think it's kind of silly? What's your opinion on that?
Well, it's interesting. When I hear that, I think it is silly that legislation has to be passed on that. But you know what's interesting to me? One of the conversations coming up in Marion County as of late is that the codes need to be revised because they haven't been revised, I believe, since the 60s. And in the 60s, some of those codes that were still upheld in the 60s date back long before that. And that some of these codes don't make sense and aren't even enforced anymore. And it's a funny thing because those are the people who preceded us in this world. And they were a little more strict than we are because those codes no longer are even... there used to be no alcohol sales on Sunday. There used to be... you could not stay open past 6 o'clock on a Sunday. Used to be you couldn't do all kinds of things. They were very strict in those ways, and back when people thought pro wrestling was a real sport, you had to pay the athletic commission to do an event. You had to have a doctor there. You had to, because they considered it a real sport. That's no longer...
But if you look at that, Scott, you really think about it. First of all, I've talked to a lot of people that remember, they call those the blue laws, by the way.
Yep.
And up in just a few years ago, those laws on Sunday were really still in play in the South and in the Carolinas. I remember that I was visiting a church in Lancaster, South Carolina, and I said to somebody Sunday morning, I said, hey, I said, is what's the closest Walmart? I need to pick up something that I had forgotten to put in my suitcase. And he just had a shocked look on his face, and he said, well, Walmart's over there, but isn't nobody going to be there? He said, they're open, but no one will be there. And he's looking at me like, you better not go. And it was kind of funny, and I did go to Walmart, and I got there, and he was right. There weren't 10 people in the whole store. But the reason behind those laws were good laws, that it kept people with their families. You know, the Bible talks about, you know, the Sabbath being a day of rest. And it's funny, Scott, because you and I had just talked a few minutes ago about stress and what stress does to people's lives. And it is, this doctor had said, that's the biggest thing. Well, Sunday, you know, God designed things in a very wise way. And he knew that we had to have a day to recharge our bodies. And those people that came before us knew that we needed that. So rather than get the ball rolling in the wrong way, they just said, look, here's the law and here's what we do. And it in a sense, it made people say, okay, it didn't tell you where to shop or what to buy. All it said was that, look, as a community, we're going to not participate. We're going to let people rest on Sunday. Do I think those should have been laws? No, because I think they should have been, it always should have been a voluntary thing, but I think it could have been stressed more in churches and by their people that, look, this law was put in place biblically by God for a reason. You need to rest. And as far as it being the Lord's Day, you know, that's a day that we dedicate ourselves to prayer and teaching and understanding. Everyone has to admit, well, even if they're secular and don't like religion, that to take one day and to recharge and regroup and not have to run here and have to run there and do all this and to think and have time with your family, that's a real good idea. And so in that case, yeah, a lot of those laws, you know, they do change and we get rid of them, but I'm not sure they were, I just really believe, I probably in my thinking am more of a libertarian. I just don't think, you know, with our liberty, we legislate way too many things, you know. And at the same time, even as a pastor, I don't believe that we can legislate morality.
Well, it's interesting because my take on any law that opens something up or offers something to people, because I give people a lot of credit. I think people are smart. I think people are informed. I think they try to stay informed. There is nothing that is legislated, like you had said, in this town where Walmart was obviously allowed to stay open past 6 o'clock, the people just didn't go. And there's nothing like that that you can't opt out of. If you called and said, I don't want to be in this program, I don't want to take advantage of this, you can opt out. So as much as somebody might try to legislate something, you can always get out of it.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Well, no, wait a minute. No, you can't always get out of it. Because if they try to legislate the fact you're not allowed to eat roadkill, you might get a ticket.
You might. Well, but you know, it's interesting because even when we were having prohibition, obviously didn't stop it.
I know. And you know, like with the roadkill thing, you know, okay, they say this because they don't want people feeding spoiled meat to their children. Those same people can go to the grocery store and leave stuff in the refrigerator too long and it'll be spoiled. I mean, there's got to be some personal responsibility as to what we do. We can't legislate personal. We don't need to legislate things that we think make us responsible. An interesting thing that's going on out there, Scott, and this one is very sad. Currently, in the dairy market, my family's been in the dairy market. I was in it. My children are in it. And you're not allowed to sell milk that has not been pasteurized, homogenized in a facility that's licensed for that, blah, blah, blah. Well, there's a lot of people out there that like to eat natural. They want stuff natural. They don't want any of that stuff done. It's a huge movement in this country, actually. And so with milk, these dairies can say, okay, we're going to sell milk shares. Now, they're still selling to major companies like they're supposed to. But say that Shea Scott Spears comes to me and says, I want to buy a milk share. And so you sell them. And what that does, it gives you a share of ownership of that animal. So you're allowed to drink your own milk. Then what you can do is come every week and say, I need 2 or 3 gallons of milk from my cows. And you can get your milk that way and take it home. It's completely, that's the way it goes out the door. People make butter with it. People love to drink the whole milk. It hasn't been split up, sucked out, and all the nutrients taken out of it. So that's a legal thing to do. Now, Tennessee is just now, it's been proposed legislation to not allow people to drink their own milk. Now, think about that. It's none of their business.
Yeah, I think that's the problem. I think those type of laws are the problem. And the roadkill would fall into that, as silly as that would seem to people, I guess. It's telling people now that you can, but I would guess, before it was telling people you couldn't. I don't like laws that say you can't. I'm right with you on that, because I think when you say you can't, then there is no option. You don't have. But what I don't understand is the laws that say this is available or the laws that say this is legal, like roadkill being legal now, if that's the case in certain states.
You mean it wasn't legal before?
Right. But you don't have to eat it now.
No.
That's the thing. I don't... when something is legal across the board, and it's not telling you not to do something, I can disagree with you all day long that you shouldn't do it. I can tell you it's a bad idea to do it. I can tell you it's a drain on people's money to do it, not do it. But I don't have to do it. So, yeah, I'm with you. I'm not sure why laws are in place that restrict things. See, I think the restrictive laws are the laws that cause the problems. The unrestricted laws, which would be the libertarian stance that we should not legislate most things, is that, okay, you know, it'll be available to you, and you can do it if you want, but I'm not going to be forced to do it.
Then there's the other side of that, too, Scott, is that say that you don't have a law that, you have a law that something is now legal, and it's something that maybe people didn't do before too much or you think about, but you really want this to happen. So now you give special rights to certain individuals that will do that. Like, for instance, and we're going to be silly again and talk about roadkill. Say that they have suddenly legalized, you're allowed to pick up animals on the road, okay? But then along with that, because this legislator has a special interest in someone that likes to pick up roadkill, they make a special law that in a certain area of the one of the highways in the Appalachian Mountains or somewhere, that from 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock every day, all traffic has to stop so people can go pick up roadkill. That's crazy. But I say that to say this. It's like giving special rights to people that didn't have them before and didn't need them. Because it's something that you want to make happen. I don't know how I feel about the government wanting legislating religion in the schools or saying we should have it, even though I don't like the fact that it's not in the schools. The bottom line is, I think they should have just left it alone to begin with. And if you had school districts and areas where they wanted it part of their curriculum, they would, and the people would voluntarily do it. If you had areas that didn't, you didn't. Leave people alone.
You know, that's always been an interesting one to me, because it came about in the 60s, and the way it reads, the way the statutes read, and I'm not quoting it exactly, but I've looked at it many times, the way that's, it's a Supreme Court decision, it's not part of the Constitution, and it's because of this reason. What it says is that you can't mandate religion in a school. Doesn't say you can't do it. And there are all kinds of child evangelical groups that do meet at schools.
Yes, absolutely. And we have some good ones.
And if you want to go, if your child wanted to go in the morning into the classroom before school started and pray, there's no law against that.
No, there's not.
No, all they did was they said, because in the 60s and prior to that, there was, for people who don't remember this, there was a mandatory prayer in a lot of schools.
I think that we have to go back and look at where our schools began and the reasoning for a lot of them. A lot of them were began by the churches and in communities, and this was just part of their daily curriculum. But if you look at what's going on, now that may be the law that it can't be mandated, but I have to tell you from very, very firsthand experience by working with young people in the school, it has been, people have been led to believe that it's much, much more than that. So when you go to do anything whatsoever that involves structured religion at the school of any kind or even with students, you are very quickly, whoa, we got to check on that. And it may be something so simple like hanging up a poster that says, hey, you're invited to this blah, blah, blah after school hours. You know, the students should have a right to put that up. But, you know, many times there are schools that say, no, anything with religion, it can't even be in the school. I mean, we've had court cases where teachers have been taken to court because they have a Bible laying on their desk. I mean, you're talking about cutting into our freedom. That's not mandating anything.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think back to 9/11, because I'll never forget this. I was in college at 9/11 time, and colleges are always seen, for the most part, to be very liberal places. I don't know where I fall on that decision being in college, but people are entitled to their opinion. But after 9/11, I'll never forget walking into a college classroom, because I always tended to get there a little early, and I remember walking into the classroom, and I saw the light was on, and usually when the light was on and the door was open, you could go in. And this is maybe 3 or 4 days after 9/11, and I walked into the classroom, and there was a prayer going on with a big group of students. Now, this was right in a classroom, right on the campus,
sure,
in the building,
legal.
And it's legal. But the school could not say that everybody goes there.
That's the way that it truly is. You know, the problem is on most of our college campuses today, especially our state colleges, if there's a student doing that, student group doing that, they're going to have another group shouting them down, which is completely wrong. I mean, that's like, you know, this has freedom has to go both ways. And it's very easy for people to get the wrong idea about what you can and can't do. I conducted a little experiment about 20 years ago. I was teaching a Sunday school class of high school kids. And I asked them, I said, how do you share your faith at school? Because it's part of your daily life and who you are. There's nothing wrong with you sharing your faith and people asking you questions and you're, you know, God tells us to share our faith, not to cram it down throats. You, like I said, you cannot mandate belief, and you can't. But you can share it and give people the opportunity to know the wonderful thing that you have in your life, and that's what's supposed to happen. Well, they said, "Oh, we can't really do that." I said, "I got an idea. How about you guys put some thing resembling your belief on your shirt, wear it to school and see what it sparks. See if kids say, hey, what's that about? I said, that will open a door for you to then talk about it. Because they said, you know, they have trouble coming. How would I break into the conversation without something like that? And they said, oh, no, we can't wear anything like that at school. I said, yes, you can. And I said, okay, here's what we're going to do. And I had these T-shirts made up. They were black T-shirts. And they had a cross on the back, a white, thick white cross on the back with a and inside the cross it said, the difference you make is the stand that you take. Now, that is provocative in thinking, you know, what's that mean? It wasn't anything particular. What stand? Am I taking a stance for purity? Am I taking a stance for, you know, whatever? So it was, and I said, now the key is I'm going to give all you kids these shirts. They're going to cost you a dime, but you got to agree to wear them to school. So they did. And then the next week they came back and I asked them, I said, did any of you get in trouble? No. Did it spark any questions from kids? Yeah, all kinds of kids were asking us what it meant. And we told them what our particular belief was in our stand. Now, see, in a lot of places, kids would think that was wrong. And in a lot, unfortunately, even educators are not educated in this subject very well. Because in a lot of schools, they would be told to immediately take that off because it was too provocative. And it's not. And you can wear things. It's really amazing to me when I look in the school libraries, and most of them now are nothing but a kiosk and where you go to download stuff. Mm. But you have all these things. You can have things in there on Gandhi. You can have things in there on Louis Farrakhan. You have things in there on Islam and all these things. But there better not be anything about Christianity. And that's gone the wrong way. And I think some of these things we need to back off and leave alone. I need to think that we need to be aware of this too, aware of the things that take our freedoms from us. And when we look at our Constitution, Scott, we have a Constitution that the Founding Fathers put there for a reason. And you remember the old saying about, Benjamin Franklin was asked by a lady, what do you think of it? And she said something in effect, you know, it's a wonderful thing. He was talking about the Constitutional Republic, if you can keep it. And what he meant by that was, it's going to have challenges. And it's always going to have challenges. And one of the main challenges we need to be very careful of is people that, when we put them in a legislative part of our country, that don't believe in our Constitution and in our American way of life. And that's where we begin to erode and find problems that, I mean, look what happened to Austria. I mean, Austria thought this great thing. Look at Germany. And, you know, sometimes things really look good, but you really got to be careful you're not opening Pandora's box. And I think that with a lot of this legislation, that's just what we do. I know that if I'd have been sitting in a living room 40 years ago, before 45 years ago, before my dad passed away, and the news would have come on, and they said something about legislating roadkill, he would have said, turn that goofy TV. Come on, that's a joke, right? And because some of the silly things we try and legislate today.
Well, it is interesting. But you know what I think this has come from? I don't necessarily think it's from the majority of the legislators, whatever they are. I honestly think people are much more nosy today. The society. Society is much more nosy. And I'm guessing this probably came about because somebody turned somebody in and we had to send the police officers out there to see what was going on because somebody wanted to stir up problem. And there was probably enough cases of it that now we have to legislate this because we can't afford to be sending the sheriff out there every time that somebody gets angry with somebody. People have by and large, society is very nice. But there are people who have a vindictive tend. And I wish
they do.
And I wish they just understood that when you accuse somebody of something, that you understand that you are, if you don't know for sure, you're taking tax dollars, you're taking time, you're taking effort away from somebody else to put the focus on somebody who isn't doing anything wrong. But I will bet you if this roadkill thing was tracked back, the sheriff and that county are in this states probably had an abnormal amount of cases where they had to go out because if somebody makes the call, you got to investigate. And they probably just said, heck with this. This is silly. If these people want to do it, that's their business. Now we've got to legislate it. People are funny that way.
Yeah, they really are. But you know, common sense has to come in at some point. And the sheriff has to stand up and say, you know what? Get a life. These people aren't doing anything wrong. And we're afraid to do that because now they're going to come after you. And we have so little faith in the court systems today and that we're afraid to go to court, even when we're in the right, because we see it all the way up to the federal level that people are in the right, but someone's going to dig up something and they're going to come. And people are afraid of true conflict because of the false conflict that's out there and the false accusations. And it's so ridiculous. I would no more want to run for office in any office today in this country. And that's sad because there are good, solid people with real good backbone and character that are not going to run for office because they know automatically that they're going to be not only under a microscope, but anymore you don't need to be under a microscope. You could be accused of anything, and it can snowball into something crazy that comes clear out of left field where it used to be that you were pretty much safe in office if you kind of watched your P's and Q's and didn't go too overboard. You could help in something. And it's that way. I was thinking about something the other day. I've got a grandson that, man, God has given that kid the gift of gab. And he's personable and he's kind-hearted. And I thought, man, he would make a wonderful pastor. Just a wonderful pastor. And I thought to myself, do I want him to be a pastor? Are pastors going to be safe in the next 20 years? Are pastors going to be in jail in the next 20 years? I mean, there's already been legislation to stop, you know, to call things hate speech that aren't. I mean, I should be free to teach the congregation I'm in anything that falls within the lines of what we believe. Now, if I tell people to go out there and assault people and hurt people, you know, that's wrong, and that's causing a problem. But to say what I believe and be somehow, you know, look what's happened in Canada. You know, pastors are so guarded by everything they say, and they can literally go to jail for saying something that doesn't follow the government guidelines, even over the air. I mean, their airwaves are so, you think you've got stuff people can't say? Try going to Canada.
Well, it's interesting, though, because 6 days ago, I had a call from somebody. And it wasn't me. This is not one of those cases where I'm the person, but this is true, but I don't want to say who it was. A group in town felt they were slandered, and I saw what had been done, and certainly it would constitute slander, but no lawyer is going to take that case for free, and no lawyer is going to guarantee that you can win because the libel laws are so difficult. You've got not only to prove that what they said was false, you've got to prove that it harmed you in some way. And that's very difficult. I don't know if I like that. And I think that hate speech, I don't know. Everybody has a different definition of what that is. You know, you can't say go kill somebody. Now, that is hate speech. Because certainly that's not protected by the First Amendment. That's hate. But if you say something about somebody else and you say the nastiest things about them, but you don't invoke anything be done about them, highly unlikely anything will be done.
Let me give you an example of two approaches from a pulpit, okay? One, I've got an approach where I say, this particular person is, let's use prostitution for an example. I'm standing in the pulpit, and I'm talking about prostitution, and I'm carrying on about the evils of prostitution, how it sweeps men away, and all these corrupt things, and I pull a bunch of Bible verses out of here and there, and I put a message together to really slam prostitutes. What have I done? I've done nothing but maybe plant some seeds of hatred. On the other hand, what if I give a message, and I talk about the brokenness of prostitution? I show what Jesus did with his example of prostitutes in the Bible and how he treated them and how difficult of a life this is that would lead someone to that point. And how to be kind, compassionate, but yet make them aware of where they're at isn't right and help them to change their lives. You see the two different pictures? One is what you talked about earlier, those people that have that vindictive, rough personality. They just want to go after someone. And we see that, unfortunately, on both sides of things. We see that on the Christian side of it. We see it in a conservative side of it. We see it in a liberal side of it. And we see that where people just want to go after someone. There's something they're not settled with in their life that they're not happy with because they're wanting to attack someone else really hard all the time. And that makes it very, very difficult. But one thing I've done that I learned a long time ago, and it works very well, and I would encourage you out there that are listening. By the way, no one's called in to get this wonderful Bible yet. I can't believe it.
Yeah, we got the Bible.
740-383-9944.
Now, if you do happen to be listening to this program on a Sunday morning during the repeat or a Tuesday, if you call in 740-383-9944 and leave it on the answering machine, we'll get it to you. But we are still live here on this Friday morning for four more minutes. 740-383-9944. It is a study Bible. It is in the box and never used and large print, so something great for you. 740-383-9944. All you got to do is call and say you want it and pick it up at some point.
Several years ago, and I just want to share with everyone, many years ago, 20-some years ago probably, I had someone that slandered me terribly. It had nothing to do with the church. It was just, and this person had a lot of friends and knew a lot of people. And I came to the conclusion that, you know, if I tried to just go out there and defend myself, I was just going to make the mud deeper. And I decided then and there, you know, there are times in our lives when it's better to keep your mouth shut. And I prayed and I told God, I said, God, this one's yours. I can't do it. You defend me. You take care of me. I'm going to keep my mouth shut. I'm going to turn the other cheek and I'm going the other way. And, you know, that's been my policy since then. Anytime that anyone ever attacks, assaults me in a personal way that's not valid. If it's valid, I need to look at it. But if it's not valid, and in this particular case, I was completely vindicated without me ever saying a word. This person was shown to be why they did it and their whole motive behind it. And I never had to say a word. And it actually made some people think better of me because, wow, that guy kept his mouth shut through all this. And the truth, I always tell people this too, the truth will always surface, just be patient.
Motive is easy to find. I always think, you know, all you have to do is find out who the person is and what the association
is. And you'll find motive.
And you'll find where it's coming from. Because, you know, normal and sane-minded people don't go out looking to strangers to try to cause problems.
No, they don't.
I mean, why would you?
Some people look to be angry.
Oh, my.
There's a restaurant I go in, and there's a lady that would come in periodically. And I felt so bad for the people there because every time she came in to start an issue, to find something wrong with the service. And you just ask her, what is this person getting out of being so miserable?
Well, that's it. I don't understand. Let's say I saw something going on wrong. Okay? Oops, saw it. It's wrong. Now, why would my modus operandi be to go to find somebody I've never met and tell them about this wrong thing? Now, if I believe it's legally wrong, I guess I can go to the police if I want to. If I believe it's morally wrong, I believe it's morally wrong. But the need for me to go
escalate
find people, I don't understand that. I don't even know what that has to do with anything.
Scott, I got to tell you. There's good and there's evil in this world. And quite frankly, some people just operate from a mode of evil. And it's just a fact. And I think that I feel bad for those people. I pray for those people. Hey, we're running out of time here. I would like to invite you to church at Community Christian Fellowship at 209 East Water Street. I'd love to see you Sunday morning. Services at 10:30. Call us 740-494-2222. And hopefully someone's going to call in and want this wonderful Bible, too. I can't believe that somebody hadn't wanted it. I guess all of our listeners must have Bibles.
You know, I'll tell you this. Most homes I go into do. Which is a good thing. I'm glad it's still that way.
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely. But I tell you what, it is here, 740-383-9944. And if you just want to stop by and pick it up, if you're the first one, you'll get it. Oh,
God,
here comes
you.
A phone call right here at the end. This might be it. Let's see if this is it. Go ahead, caller.
Scott, this is Ralph. I'll take that Bible.
You got it, Ralph. It's yours. You want the you want the pancake tickets?
Yes, I'll pick them up this afternoon.
You got them, Ralph.
Hey, hey Ralph, are you going to use it?
Yes, sir. I put it side of my bed.
Well, God bless you, buddy.
Thank you, sir. I'll enjoy your programs.
Thank you. Pastor, have a great week.
You too.
29 years, and imagine what happened during those times. And we talked about it, and this show had my name on it. It was wonderful. You got to meet everybody.